We are opening at 6:38. And is there anybody here who would like to speak to any closed session items before we go into closed session? Seeing no one, we will adjourn into closed session and reopen.
Going to go ahead and call this meeting to order at 7 p.m. Mr. Spence will lead us in the invocation, and Ms. Crystal Ball will lead us in the flag salute.
Congratulations, my Father. We're grateful as we gather as Board of Trustees of West Virginia Unified and as staff and community. We're grateful for the opportunity we have to serve, and we're grateful for our teachers and our staff, and we're grateful for the parents of the students that we serve, and we'd ask a blessing upon all of them, that they will continue to do their best on behalf of the students in our charge, and bless us that we'll have a productive meeting. And this we pray in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Cristina de Jimenez.
Here.
Colon.
Here.
Spence.
Here.
Mr. Clark.
Here.
Mr. Schumacher.
Here.
Mr. Buzz. Here. Mrs. Kaplan.
Here.
Okay. I have two items to report from closed session. All righty. First, in closed session, the board took the following action by a vote of 5-0. The board took action to approve a settlement agreement related to OAH case number 201-3060875. And it was unanimous. Was moved by Ms. Poulos and seconded by Ms. Shoemaker with a 5-0 vote, unanimous. Okay. In accordance with Ed Code Section 48918J, the board will take the final action in open session on the expulsion matters described in Item A of the closed session agenda. With regard to the recommendation to expel student 204420 for violation of Ed Code Section 48900C, who will move this? Is there a motion?
I will move it.
Okay, and who will second it?
I'll second it.
Okay, it was moved by Ms. Cami Poulos, seconded by Jessica Shoemaker. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I have a question. Since this is a new format of bringing out the expulsions to be discussed out in public or voted on in public, do you see a problem that at some point we'll talk about, for example, this student had prescription drugs and we're suspending them and expelling them because of that? Or, I mean, is that something that then we can talk about if we're in disagreement with it, when normally we would do that in closed sessions?
How about we get a let's get a word from our lawyer, but it's my understanding we talk about those things in closed session.
Okay.
We take the vote in open session, though. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? It is carried 5-0. Okay. We had a few activities. The Red Ribbon Week, I wasn't there for that because I was over at Hearst Ranch. And I'm so happy to say we had a few of our little garden gourmets show up. And they got in free. And they were thrilled to bring their families with them. So I must say what a great partnership this has been. I must have counted at least a dozen little garden gourmets in their shirt. Aww. Running around Hearst Ranch at the Harvest Festival, with very proud with moms and dads and brothers and sisters in tow. Aww. So I have to report that went really, really well. Also happy to report that our training session with our students from Edgewood has completed. They are very well versed. They're ready to hit the ground running with us. I have to say that Hannah and Lauren did an excellent job. Thank you very much. And to the staff, Ms. Hawkins, Dr. Coghlan, and Mr. Seaman, thank you very much for making yourselves available to the students. It was very informative for them. Can anybody comment on Red Ribbon? Because I wasn't there for that.
I was there. You were there, too. I think Shoemaker, Mr. Cox, I know I saw Mr. Cox and myself there. I don't know if you were there. But there were lots of people getting free pancakes, that's for sure. because that line was long and stayed pretty solid long through the first part of the day. So it was there were a lot of people there. I don't know how many pancakes they ended up making. But
just want to say that each of our schools performed. So they had performance from the morning from 7:30 all the way through the day by our schools, whether it was our cheer teams, chorus, bands, dance teams. So it was really nice to see all of our schools support this event. Mm-hmm. That's the first time that so many of our students performed.
That's excellent. Mr. Marentes, and I apologize, it did slip my mind for a moment, but the students from Coronado were awesome. The staff was so grateful, so happy. The students were incredibly helpful, smiles on their faces, very respectful, patient with the students. It was a really, I was so proud as a board member. You should be equally proud as the principal. And the staff that came also was awesome. So thank you so much for having them one more time support the efforts of Hurst Ranch. Thank you. I also wanted to let the board know that the retirement of Dr. David Hill went very well on Saturday. A lot of community support. I did present the award. I gave a very good quote that had to do with sight. And when you open sight, you then open the world. And I thanked him on behalf of the district and the students of our school. Of our district. So I wanted to also mention that. Anybody else would like to comment from the board? Any other reports? No. And then I also went to the LCFF training. I don't know if anybody else went, the CSBA regional training. I also went to that, and that was excellent, and I shared some of the information. I did ask for copies for all of you, packets, so I'm waiting for that to get mailed. They indicated they would mail packets of their PowerPoint presentation, which was very informative for everyone. Okay, Ms. Crystal Ball.
Coronado High School. We had our model school visit today, and the committee is recommending that we be granted model school status. We have also been asked to present at the Continuation Schools Conference, and they want Coronado to be a demonstration school for Common Core transition. Our students volunteered at Hurst Ranch this past weekend, and we are in line to surpass our volunteer hours from last year. Our parent conference night was a great success, and parents were happy to receive progress reports and meet with teachers. Next week is Spirit Week, which will culminate in a costume contest, which will include the students from the transition program. Football is on another winning streak. They won 42-10 this week. Edgewood High School. The ASB Renaissance team is planning our November 1st assembly to celebrate our academic accomplishments to date, recognize special groups on campus, and promote the upcoming homecoming dance. The assembly will be held in the gym at 10 a.m., and all are welcome. Cross country, volleyball, tennis, and water polo close out their seasons this week. Winter sports teams are conditioning, and their seasons will soon be underway. Travel Club will host its final fundraiser with a November 2nd car wash. To date, the 21 students have raised $17,400. Drama Club is selling tickets for Godspell, which will be held November 22nd to 25th. Tickets are selling well, with opening night already sold out. Our mock trial team is preparing to go to the competition at the LA Superior Courthouse beginning November 4th. Interact is planning a Halloween lunchtime celebration with all proceeds going to UNICEF. Interact will also host a food drive for local food banks during the first 2 weeks of November. In addition, Interact is working with an organization called Not On Our Watch to raise awareness of the genocide happening in Sudan. Toward that end, they have hosted free showings of the award-winning documentaries Journey to Darfur and Darfur Now. On November 8, Interact will host a fundraiser to support the Not On Our Watch organization. Poetry Club has completed auditions for their February production of Much Ado About Edgewood 2. They cast 48 Edgewood students in the production, and rehearsals are underway. West Covina High School. West Covina High School just completed staff professional development on student data talks. Teachers will lead classroom discussions with all 2,400 students on their state assessment, benchmark, and progress grade performance. The discussion will focus on goal setting for the year. Students will then share their data and goals with the parents to ensure home support. This is our fourth year conducting student data talks. We feel strongly that these discussions have led to our increased gains in academic performance. Our homecoming weekend was a great success. We began the day with our traditional homecoming rally with all 2,400 students at Thyberg Field. The festivities continued as we officially kicked off the Mike Akura Memorial Field fundraising. Our food truck, t-shirt, wristband, and donation campaign was a huge success. Many alumni returned to reminisce and give thanks to a former mentor, colleague, and friend. Skits, a wonderful halftime show, and a huge football win finished off our Friday. Our homecoming dance on Saturday was a blast and all had fun. We continue to plan and prepare for our annual career fair. Our new Dean of Students, Mr. Joe Pristella, and a veteran planning committee are working hard to ensure this year's event tops all previous ones. We will have public, private, and technical schools in attendance, as well as many local community partners, the armed services, government agencies, and local trades in attendance sharing their insights on career options. We hope you will join us Friday, November 1st from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Thank you very much. Thank you. We wish you well on your studies tonight.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, I do not have any blue cards in front of me. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to address the board? Welcome, students.
Hi.
Which school are you all from? West Covina High School. Is it the government class? Okay. Okay. At the back of the room, just real quick, there's copies of the agenda if you all want to get it so you can follow along. The back in the foyer. Sorry, in the foyer. Yes, that way you can follow along. Okay, we're going to move on to the business session of our agenda. Is there anyone who'd like to remove any items from closed session? Anybody who'd like to remove any items from consent? I apologize.
I'd like to take 3 and 4 off.
3 and 4. Any other items? Nope. Okay, so we will take item 3 and 4 off of consent. Okay, who will move this?
I'll second.
Okay, it has been moved by Jessica Shoemaker and seconded by Mike Spence to approve the agenda with the removal of item 3 and 4 from consent for the regular meeting of October 22nd, 2013. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Carries 5-0. Let's go to item number 3, Mr. Spence.
I only pulled this off because now if we're signed up to do this online, they also have their updates, right, as part of this fee is, I guess it's all-inclusive, you can't pick and choose or whatever. Is that correct?
My understanding is they're trying to get us to switch over to this online version. I'm going to have Monica help with this. And that they're doing away with the current format, and so they're going to be letting us use the web-based version for the same amount that we've been paying for the updates.
For the paper updates. My only concern is that in the past when we've had CSBA policies, sometimes they develop policies that we as a school district completely are not interested in, or they change policies to suit what they think should be going on, and you know many districts adopt them, but then we'll change it once we look into the law and stuff like that. And so my concern is that once there's a web-based one and then all the updates, that somehow we'll start merging that without taking a close look at all the stuff that they're asking for and being reflective.
My understanding is we will still be bringing, it gives us the opportunity to search the online, not only to see what the recommendation is from the School Boards Association, but to see what other district policies are. But my understanding is we'll still be getting lists of policies that are up for update that we can pull and continue to bring to you. That the process that we're doing won't change, just how we're getting those policies will change.
Okay.
It won't change what we're doing with you at all.
Okay. I'll go ahead and move it.
Well, I have a question before we do.
Then
we have cost not to exceed $750. And so when I was reading the agreement, it says under condition precedent, districts wishing to access their manual online must also subscribe to the CSBA Manual Maintenance Plus service, which is a separate and independent fee.
Mm-hmm. So I don't think this is putting ours online. It's that we're using the online service to pull off the – they're not going to be sending them to us manually anymore, mm-hmm. So that we use the service to pull off the policies that are being recommended for revision. You also can look at policies of other districts who subscribe to that. But if we wanted to have our policies online, that would be an additional fee.
Well, and part of the background we're talking about here is and provide access to the district's policy manual online. update district's manual based on the district's submission of its adopted policies to CSBA. So we're in the 750, we're not getting all of those services, we're just basically able to access online what we get now.
I believe for the first year they're allowing us with the 750, they're allowing us with the access to the thing online for what we normally would take for the policy updates. They're saying for this time, and that's why they're saying they would do it every year unless we decide not to. If in a year's time we decide not to, we can go back to just having the policy updates.
Okay, so we're not going to be using the aspect that puts our policies online.
Right. So I thought they were doing away with what we have right now, the policy updates, and that's why they're offering us this.
That was my understanding.
They're trying to enhance it. They're trying to push forward the gamut online, which I remember from years back was also access to other districts as well as ours. So who will participate in gamut, we would have accessibility to all those policies. So for this one time, they said, what you normally would pay for the policy updates will give you accessibility to that for the 1 year. And then if you decide to continue to do that, you can. If not, you can always go back and just resume the policy updates and you wouldn't be part of the gamut.
And then the policy updates is that you would be able to retrieve them online instead of them mailing them to you.
They actually email them and report you the whole thing to us.
And is it just you? As the administrator, person in charge of the updates, or would the whole school board be and all the administrators be able to access that online?
I'm not quite sure how that works. I would imagine that as part of the thing, we would all have.
We don't know. I don't want to answer that if we don't have the answer. Would you like to pull it and get more information?
Yeah.
Okay. We will go ahead and table item number 3. We'll bring it back next time. Okay, item number 4, Mr. Spence.
Yeah, I pulled this. If we can go to 4I. By the way, thank you for working on the language on the wellness part. Try to coordinate that. I had a question here in this first paragraph. And I see that you added words inappropriate or unlawful, segregating down at the bottom, and stereotyping students. I see you added that because I asked the question about segregating students based on sex. At the top here, it says to provide a safe school environment that allows equal access. The board prohibits that any school district or school activity, you take out the word unlawful, and then it just says discrimination, harassment, intimidation, and then you have the student's actual sex. And then if you skip down, you include also sexual orientation, gender, gender identity, or gender expression, or the perception of one or more of such characteristics. So are you saying that there is never, when you take out the word unlawful discrimination, that we can't discriminate based on sex? Down below, we use the word unlawful, segregating, or inappropriate. But I asked the question about how we segregate locker rooms and things like that based on sex. And the way I read this, you take out the word unlawful discrimination and just add all these things, including perception, gender expression, and, of course, perception, gender identity, gender, and I'm not sure how our staff would even know what many of those things are, to be quite honest.
Mr. Seaman.
If I'm understanding your question correctly, we did remove the word unlawful, basically because discrimination, harassment, intimidation, bullying. I'm not sure there is lawful discrimination or lawful harassment.
That was my question. That was your question. There is lawful discrimination, and that includes that I have a daughter, and she doesn't get to go to the same locker room as my son.
Well, I'm not sure that's discrimination, but
well,
if you're talking about segregation.
We're segregating them. We're separating them based on their gender, gender expression, perceived gender, or whatever, aren't we?
Not by class. We do have a girls' locker room. We have a boys' locker room. We don't have girls' pee and boys' pee. The class itself is not single sex. We don't have a swimming class, but if we did, it would be co-ed. It
but
could
we
be
have
co-ed.
Separate extracurricular activities.
We do have
separate. Separated, correct?
We do,
okay,
but it's not necessarily restricted only to boys or girls, depending on which extracurricular activity you're talking about.
Right. But it's
and that's why you put.
Activities,
that's
but
why
we
do
have separate boys and girls teams, do we not?
We do.
Okay. So how does that fit under our policy where we prohibit that or any school activity?
I'm sorry?
It talks about school activities in here as well.
Right. Legally. We do have boys and girls teams, but if we are doing something that's unlawful in that segregation and not allowing boys if we have to play on girls' teams or girls if we are lawfully supposed to on boys' teams, then that's where the unlawful or inappropriate segregation and stereotyping comes in. The lawful, I didn't see where there was discrimination, and harassment, intimidation, or bullying that could happen that would be lawful. I do see another typo mistake that we probably need to fix also when I'm reading this. Not to go off subject, but that first actual, which says the student's actual and then or perceived as cross, that actual should be struck through also because it's repeated down at the end of that paragraph.
Where?
That same paragraph, 4I, at the beginning.
Right, you took that perceived, and then you have it down below.
Where it says or perceived is struck through, the actual or perceived both should be struck through because it's listed at the bottom here. Group of one or more of these actual or perceived characteristics. It's just reworded differently because it applies to actual perceived characteristics of all of them, not just six. But in adding this and striking this through was kind of going off of what you had said. I couldn't come up with a scenario where there is lawful discrimination, harassment, intimidation, or bullying.
Well, of course not harassment or.
But I saw the segregating.
Of course not on harassment or bullying or anything like that, but at the same time, when we talk about, you know, so in your mind then, segregating is not discriminating.
Well, he put, if you look at the policy.
No, I'm just asking because.
In that short context, I would say no. I don't think segregation is necessary discrimination.
Okay.
If that's the.
So are you suggesting, Mr. Spence, that we leave unlawful and then that?
Down below.
I think it makes it better, but I think there's also, because now the state, I realize the state has mandated a lot of this, you know, there has to be AR on how some of this stuff has to be done administratively. I mean, otherwise it's just, you know, all loosey-goosey. I mean, tell me what someone, when you know you're discriminating against someone's perceived gender identity or expression. How would you know that?
Well, it would depend on the situation.
But is it possible not to know?
Oh, of course, yes.
Yeah, so then in our AR, we would have to have some kind of way of knowing. All right?
And I'm not sure off the top of my head if we have an AR that goes to 5145.3. I don't know if we do or not. I'd have to look in the book, but
okay.
I don't know off the top of my head.
Those are my questions.
I'm fine with leaving unlawful there. I know it's struck through right now, but it. I'm.
That list of words, and not to interrupt you, I'm sorry, Ms. Miranda Jimenez, but discrimination,
yes,
harassment, intimidation, and bullying is actually listed throughout this particular board policy. I would just suggest if we put it in one place, we put it in all places.
Okay.
Or we take it out of all places, one of the two. So it's
uniform. We're consistent.
Yeah.
Let's be consistent. Okay. It's a very good suggestion. Okay, so this doesn't make you feel comfortable here?
No, this whole thing doesn't make me comfortable because when it talks about we're going to provide age-appropriate training and information to students, parents, guardians, and employees, you know, from what I'm hearing, we don't have an AR that goes with it at all, so I'm not clear what that means.
Okay. Ms. Pelos, you make a comment?
If there wasn't, can we table this until we find out if there is an AR?
We sure can.
And then look at the AR to see how these are, how we're actually going to act on the policy.
Bifurcating just the one policy?
Well, that's the one I had my question about, yeah.
You're recommending if there is no AR to write an AR to support this policy and bring it back.
And bring them both back.
Helpful.
And bring them both back. Okay. We can do that. Mr. Cox, any comments?
When will it be brought back?
Next board meeting.
Well, if we have to rewrite an AR, I can't guarantee it will be the next quarter.
Well, maybe we can check out CSBA's. Oh, wait, we didn't approve that either. Okay. So.
We will bring it back as soon as we have a completed document for you.
Okay.
And we'll try for the next board meeting.
Okay. Does she make her any comments?
Just that when you're rewriting it, in some places it's not going to make sense to put unlawful discrimination. So should not be a one for all that has unlawful in front of it. For example, the second paragraph.
Very next paragraph, yeah.
Discrimination.
I see that.
I mean, prohibited unlawful discrimination.
It's like a double negative.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Were there any other items that you had pulled it off?
I'll move the others.
Okay. Any other comment from anybody else?
So I'll move the board policies as listed here with the exception of 5145.3.
Okay, so Mr. Spence is going to move that. It is seconded by Ms. Shoemaker. Okay, it is moved by Mr. Spence, seconded by Ms. Shoemaker to adopt the following board policies and bifurcate or table BP4145.3, non-discrimination harassment. And the administrative regulations as presented. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, that carries 5-0. Alrighty, the information report, item number 6. I'm excited about this. I will turn this over to Ms. Kaplan.
I'm glad you're excited.
I am very excited.
I am too.
I am very excited. As you're walking over, you walked in a little late. If you want, in the foyer, the agenda is out there if you want to follow us along. And you're from the government class as well? Okay, good. Okay.
Well, good evening.
Good
tonight, I'm here to talk to you about the development of the school site action plans that were developed by each school and aligned to the district strategic plan. In your packet, you received a copy of each school action plan, and I really wanted to spend a little bit of time sharing with you the process in which they were developed and also kind of highlighting some of the common themes that we're seeing within all action plans. When we developed our district strategic plan, and in developing the activities and timelines to support each of the objectives, it really was like a think tank. Each committee had many members and looked at a lot of research talking about what are the activities that we would need to put into place to make these objectives and goals realities. And so that was kind of the thinking piece of it. But, of course, the really most important is the implementation of the plans and the fact that you don't want a district strategic plan to be a document that is a district document that kind of goes on the shelf and is dusted off once or twice a year. And the way that you make a strategic plan a living document is where each school looks at this strategic plan and looks at their individual school's goals and strengths and look for activities and objectives that they can pull off of the district strategic plan and each year update that. So you start, this is base year one, what are the things we're going to do this year? At the end of the year, evaluate what our progress has been and then continue developing goals going forward. So I had asked each school to develop a process at their school site to review the district strategic plan and develop their own school site plan. And I have to tell you, I was really very excited about the processes that schools did to involve their staff, their leadership teams in developing their plans. So majority of our schools actually looked at the strategic plan with their leadership teams and developed objectives for their school under each of the strategic focus areas. The leadership teams were very much involved in developing the actions that were going to go along, activities that were going to go along with the strategic objectives. Then the leadership team would either bring it back to the faculty at a staff meeting or through department meetings or grade level meetings and get input from other staff members and then come together and agree on what that plan was going to be for the school. I've talked to several teachers who were involved in the process, and they were all really excited about it and felt a lot of ownership for what they were doing at their school site. I meet once a week with our union leadership, David Beggy and Joanne Van Eyck, and each of their schools used this kind of a process and told me how they felt that their site plans were really a focus for their school, where they knew where they were going, what they were going to do, and that there was ownership from teachers in terms of the implementation of these goals. At the same time, I asked my principals then to look at our balanced leadership framework, because those are really responsibilities that leaders use to bring about change in their school. And there is a self-evaluation that's part of that. So what our leaders did then, after developing their action plan with their school, went through the self-evaluation of these leadership responsibilities and picked three goals under the balanced leadership framework in terms of what they were going to do as instructional leaders to support the – I'm not there yet. I haven't moved yet. I'm still talking on the same page. Actually, I'm – to develop the implementation of their plans. And so – I'm sorry, you did move it. So each principal then internalized it in terms of their own strengths and areas that they needed to grow on and what were they going to do at their site as instructional leaders. So for an example, one principal may have said, for focus for leadership, I'm going to do involvement with curriculum instruction and assessment because for right from the beginning or the literacy instructional strategies, that's new to me. And so I need to be really involved in learning what these strategies are, really get involved in the curriculum part, the instruction part, and how to assess it. So that might be a goal for an individual principal. In magnitude of change, their goal might be monitor and evaluate. That is, an administrative leader, my job is to monitor and evaluate how these instructional strategies are actually being implemented into the classroom so that I can see at the end of the year what's different in terms of what we're doing for students than what we were doing at the beginning of the year. And for purposeful community, they might have a goal of culture of collaboration, risk-taking, and teacher leadership. Because to have teachers be willing to really jump in and really get involved in these new strategies, they have to really build that kind of culture that we're going to work together, we're going to collaborate with one another, we're going to understand that there's some risk-taking, and that we're going to honor the teacher leaders at our school to help our teachers implement these things. So those are three examples of what the principal might pick as a goal for themselves in terms of their growth and development for the school year that's going to support the implementation of the action plans. So I tried to look at all of the action plans and look for common threads because I did not tell our principals what to choose from the action plans. They actually looked at those action plans and looked at kind of the things that we're doing district-level staff development to pick what they were going to focus on. And I was really pleased at the end of the day to see how common some of these focus areas were, that you could look at elementary, middle school, and high school, and there was a common theme going through in terms of what our teachers were going to be doing initially for the strategic plan and the Common Core. So, for example, most of the schools really wanted to look at the ELA standards in the core curriculum standards and look for what the gaps were and what are the things that they might want to focus on. They also really took a look at the fiction versus nonfiction. So in our elementary schools, where we typically did more fiction than nonfiction, a goal for the school might be to introduce more nonfiction texts or to use nonfiction texts in other subject areas in terms of the literacy skills. Depth of knowledge we shared with you last time in terms of those different levels of depth of knowledge that provide more rigorous activities. And so all of our schools really wanted to focus on those levels so that as teachers are planning lessons, they could really look at the kinds of questions they're asking or the kinds of activities that students are being involved with and how rigorous those were going to be. The three strategies that came across from elementary, middle to high school were the close reading, the text-dependent questions, and the academic and content vocabulary. Close reading strategies, what's different about that is it's really taking a text. It could be a poem, it could be an article, it could be a chapter in a book, but not just reading it the first time, that we're really trying to get kids to read more complex texts. And so when they read a text, they read it the first time. They may go through and number the paragraphs. They may chunk the text where they might look at one paragraph and just really work with that paragraph and keep going back into it. They underline and circle, which we've all learned to do when we went to college. They might use the left margin to anecdote what is the author actually saying, to rewrite in their own words what they think the paragraph is saying. And they might use the right margin, to deeper understanding of the text. The teacher may ask them to compare the characters in the text, and so they might write some information that they see in that particular paragraph that compares the characters. They might be looking at find a powerful verb to describe what the author is doing in this piece of text, or they might just ask students to read it and what questions do they have that they might bring to a Socratic seminar. So close reading is really not just reading the text closely, but it's to apply a lot of different strategies to enhance the comprehension and to go into deeper comprehension. The academic vocabulary, that might be if we're looking at math and academic vocabulary. I mean, academic vocabulary is like when we're using words like articulate, detect, determine, formulate, to make sure that the students understand those academic words. Where contact vocabulary might be in math, using the common factor to estimate, to what is a decimal, or in history where we're looking at artifacts, explore, immigrant, primary source, sources. So it's really pre-teaching vocabulary, both that would be assigned to the academics that we're doing, but also specific to the different content. So all of our elementary schools, we're focusing on those areas, and so there's a common thread going through in terms of what we're trying to do. Professional development, once these plans were developed, our schools looked at their professional development plan for what they're going to be doing on Tuesdays and Wednesdays to make sure that their professional development plan is aligned to what our teachers are going to be learning. So the professional development plans might be on close reading. The professional development plan may be on technology, but all of the professional development plans are really aligned to what they're doing at their schools. And then workshops or communication with parents was also a very common theme in most of our elementary schools. In our secondary schools, all of those things were incorporated, but when they talked about text, really it was going for more nonfiction text, because in our high school, the goal is more 70% nonfiction, 30% fiction. Our high school and middle school teachers are working on performance tasks or writing tasks that are going to prepare our kids to be able to take the Smarter Balance assessment. And through the teams that are working at the district office, the curriculum content teams, they're actually developing units of study and assessment modules that they are using in their schools. So the secondary in literacy goes a little bit deeper. In writing, we've talked a lot about right from the beginning and beyond. All of our teachers are being trained at the district office level. We bring all the kindergarten teachers together, all the first grade teachers, second grade teachers. Today, the first grade teachers were trained by other teachers. I was happy I was in the building. At the end of the training, I heard this great applause, and the teachers were really very, very positive about the training they're getting from other teachers. And the training is on mini lessons, the training is on thinking journals, and right now they're focusing in elementary on narrative and response to literature, where our secondary is going to move forward to expository and argumentative writing. Again, all of our schools are looking at developing writing performance tasks at least twice a year so that they can look at the narrative writing and the response to literature and make sure they're able to look at student work and give them tasks that they can actually see the progress of their writing. Again, the collaboration, the PD, and the workshops are embedded in the writing as well. Secondary goes a little bit deeper. They're trying to create writing prompts across the curriculum. The high school is a little behind, where we have right from the beginning and beyond for K-8. The high school this year is just being trained in the right for the future. So they're a year behind where we were with our K-8. Right now we're just focusing on our trainer of trainers who will spend this year being trained, going back in their classroom and trying the strategies, and coming back and implementing that with their staff. So they're continuing their focus on AVID writing, as well as context-specific vocabulary, which is similar to what I just described to you. Looking at technology in our elementary schools, or probably all of our schools, elementary and secondary, are really looking at doing technology needs assessments. I'm sorry, can you? I'm way far. I need you to do this for me because I'm talking and not. Okay. So many of the schools, they have such a wide gap between some teachers are just really learning how to attach things to emails, while other teachers really are using a lot of apps in the classroom. And so we recognize that we really need to do a needs assessment, both in terms of what we have for our hardware and our software, but also to differentiate between the kind of staff development that we need to provide for our teachers. schools are looking at software programs that are going to enhance our lessons. And again, the big focus is to develop lessons where students are actually having to use technology to demonstrate their knowledge and learning, because that's what they're going to have to be doing on the SBAC assessments. Some of our schools are really focusing on internet training and safety, and as a district, we're looking at wireless across all areas. Our high school, because it's easier to specialize in content areas, I think they're going a little bit deeper, where they're asking their teachers to develop lessons in specific content areas that ask students to use the technology applications. So again, it prepares them for real-life situations. And through the work that's been happening at the district level in terms of the content teams, a lot of them are writing performance tasks that include using technology within the performance task, and so students are using that technology in terms of doing those performance tasks. Active citizenship, a big focus this year for our elementary schools is the CHAMPS, which is a school-based positive behavior plan. Several of our schools are using that, while other schools have this year decided to just do school-wide character education, which again is looking for ways to support global citizenship. All of our schools are looking for leadership opportunities for students. Our elementary schools not all of our elementary schools have student councils, so some schools are looking at that or having newspaper clubs, but looking for ways that students can be have activities that provide for leadership. Schools are looking for specific activities that might be school-wide or community-based programs that as a school they take on a certain charity or take on a certain focus that they look at as a school. And then some of our, we know that we're collaborating with Hearst Ranch and Kaiser as well as partnerships. In the secondary school, because we have secondary social studies, history and social studies teachers, one thing that is different between elementary and secondary is, our elementary teachers teach every subject area. So we really can't overwhelm them with every single focus area to give them a lot of goals. We want them to have fewer goals and to go really deep in those goals. So our elementary schools are really focusing on the writing, and they're really focusing on the literacy. In our secondary schools, because we have content teachers, they're able to go deeper into the active citizenship. They're able to go deeper into the STEM. So when you look at the secondary action plans, you will see where they're really teaching students to analyze and synthesize information from multiple sources, where they're utilizing primary and secondary sources, and they're designing and implementing curricula like in the economics and government. So they're getting deeper into the classes and the content areas. So you'll see that more in the secondary schools in terms of the active citizenship. And again, I'm just summarizing. The plans were so rich, it was really very difficult for me to, it was really easier for me to give you the plans so you could look at them individually. STEM, again, in the elementary with STEM, we're really focusing right now on implementing our Envision math program and adding other kinds of materials that focus on problem solving and the applications of the Common Core, and different kinds of, some of the schools are really focusing on the scientific method, project-based learning. Of course, we're using thinking maps throughout all school plans. What I'm pleased about to see at the elementary level, we're seeing more and more schools focus on common assessments. So you might have a team, third grade team, fourth grade team, fifth grade team. Instead of each individual teacher doing their own assessments, they come up with an assessment together and teach the subject, give the common assessment, and then have a way of looking at student work to see are all students really progressing at the same level, as one class progressing more than another class, and then they can have conversations in terms of what one teacher might be doing differently to get those kinds of results. And that's very exciting to see at the elementary level. At the secondary level, I think the science teachers are more involved in actually STEM lessons, integrating math, science, and technology. We've developed a partnership with the Youth Science Center, and all of our middle schools are actually working with Dr. Shoup, and the teachers are actually working with Dr. Shoup. So the students go to the Youth Science Center, but Dr. Shoup and his his, I guess, team comes in and works with teachers in terms of how to take that kind of instruction into the classroom, and it's been very well accepted at all of our schools, and started at Hollandcrest, and each of our other schools are just dying to get involved in that as well. Again, the gate activities that we do this, I don't know if many of you went to the secondary gate, but it's definitely focused on problem-based, that your children were involved in that, problem-based learning, I think it's Edgewood is looking at Cal Poly for their robotics program. So STEM is such a new area for us to look in. Every school is trying to find where their entry point is to start building a culture of really valuing science, education, engineering, science, math, engineering, and technology. At the district level, there's a lot of staff development that's been going on from the beginning of the school year, and kudos to Mrs. Hopkins and Mrs. Lessiker. We have curriculum development teams in literacy, in writing, in STEM, in global citizenship, and teachers came in this summer, and they're continuing throughout the year to develop units of study and modules and assessments that then they go back and share with their teams. And within those units, if for literacy, for example, there are activities with close reading, there are activities with text-dependent questions. So what's happening at the district level is also going back to the school level with teachers coming in with experts in this area and able to share with their colleagues. The right from the beginning, I have to tell you that it's been so exciting. Last year we trained our trainers of trainers from right from the beginning and beyond. They implemented all last year K-8, and this year they have been doing all the staff development at the district level, and they are such great facilitators. They have tremendous respect from their colleagues in terms of what they're presenting. The math teachers came in because we do it in content areas, so the middle school math teachers all came in, and they had math teachers actually training the math, their colleagues training them on how to implement writing within math. And they were really excited about it. It wasn't as intimidating. And if you ask them and you talk to them, they say, yes, it's overwhelming. We've never taught writing before. But to be trained by their colleagues who are actually doing it in their classroom, it really makes it something that they think is attainable and appreciated. Our instructional technology, we're looking at instructional technology, professional development across the district in terms of, again, because we have to differentiate. Some schools are bringing in iPads. Other schools are experimenting with other kinds of technology. So we see it as our responsibility to be able to differentiate and provide the staff development, whether it be at the school site or at the district site. And the actual curriculum team is developing expectations for students' use and teachers' use in terms of technology for teaching and learning. So we're going to hopefully at the end of the year have those expectations, what everybody should be able to do by either a teacher or a student, and it would be more explicit. So personally, I felt that I met with every single school to go over their action plans. They were extremely excited about it and appreciated having the opportunity of developing their action plan based on the strategic plan. I see a lot of ownership at our principals and for our teachers. I think the plans were very aggressive. If you look at the plans, they're really putting a lot out there, but it's their roadmap, and I think they feel very focused. They know what the professional development they need to do to support their teachers. They know what professional development the district's going to do to support their teachers. And we're kind of all moving in the same direction. And so I was really impressed with the work that each of our schools did and how seriously they took this. And I can honestly say that our strategic plan is not going on a shelf collecting dust, that it's active, it's happening at our school level, and there's a lot of ownership for the work that they're doing.
Ready to entertain questions?
I'm always ready to entertain questions.
Okay. Ms. Shoemaker, do you have any questions? Mr. Spence.
Yeah, I did. You mentioned with the character-based education, community-based organizations would be part of that. And how, what's the definition that we use for community-based organizations? And
I don't think, if I said that, I didn't mean to say that.
No, it was actually in the printout. I can get the printout out. It was talking about using service opportunities.
Oh, service opportunities.
And then you use the word community-based organizations. I'll pull it out.
For the high school?
Right.
Yeah, for the high school.
Like community-based, I would think of as Interact, where the students who are in Interact are working with Rotary and involved in some of the community operations at Rotary. When I think of community-based, I think of the work that Coronado students did going over to Hearst Ranch and working within the community. I think of, you know, what the Not On Our Watch, what they're doing at Edgewood. I think it's getting involved in things that are happening in our community and supporting those community events.
Right. It says participate in school-wide and community-based programs and activities.
What I meant is school-wide. I guess what I was trying to say in that is that school-wide, that it would be a school-wide focus. In some schools, they're picking a school-wide community, I don't know what I'm trying to, a charity or something that the school is going to
take on
as a school.
And do we have a standard for that?
I don't believe we do have a standard, Mr. Spence. I don't know that we have.
Because, you know, obviously, you know, lots of charities would love to have an entire school fundraise for them or be educated about their particular issues, a showcase and stuff. And so we should have some kind of standard to make sure that, you know, we're protecting our students too, and that and any funds they may be raising, if that's a charity they're raising money for, or, and that it links into some type of curricula-based project as well, I would think. So, I mean, I would encourage us to have a standard if we're going to do that, what kind of community-based groups or programs they are. Or how does it work? Yeah, community-based programs / activities. My second question deals with the tech stuff, and you mentioned that there's disparities between the different campuses. And, you know, because, like, I know, like, at Monta Vista, it's all, we're going to do an inventory to find out what we have. And I was like, you know, what, we don't know what we have? You know, as far as technology, don't we have a... Don't we have to account for that every year when we do our audits of, you know, equipment and stuff? And that gets to the question of, I guess, and you also mentioned the disparities in staff, that apparently there's some staff that are having trouble or just learning how to attach things to email.
Proficiency levels, I would call it.
Yeah, proficiency levels. Okay. And so that brings up the issue of, at several of the school sites, the plan is for us to purchase iPads for every teacher.
No, I think different.
It says that. Well, it says
different schools.
California.
There are different schools
question.
That are. Yes, there are different. There's going to be a district plan in terms of what we're looking at, but I'm also encouraging pilots at schools for some interest if there's interest in iPads. So it's both from a district level and from a school level. I do encourage that schools look at different technologies that are out there and get involved in it.
Yeah, and I'm not opposed to them looking at technologies. I just question, I guess, because it's being done at some school sites and not others, and I don't know how the iPad platform was, I guess, chosen for that, because there's other tablets that people can use and other systems, and exactly, I guess, how they would be used that would do that, and what's our policy on teachers if we're going to give them an iPad? That's a pretty nice Benny. Are they allowed to do stuff outside of school on it? How
no,
do we
they're not. They actually, well, and I don't
mean,
know.
Do we have all that stuff? I haven't seen any of that stuff.
Okay. Right now, the way I look at it is, as a district, we're developing policies and procedures, and we're looking at what's best, Chromebooks versus iPads, for a district-wide implementation. I feel that's very slow. It's going slow, that there are some schools and some teachers who are ahead of us as a district in terms of being able to use technology in an effective way for teaching and learning. And there are a lot of other school districts out there have piloted these different things and have used different forms of technology. So I personally am encouraging different schools to pilot and use different forms, because that's going to feed back into our district plan of what is working effectively and efficiently. And I don't want the district to hold back individual teachers or schools in being able to move faster than maybe we are able to do as a district.
Well, that brings up the issue, I guess, then, of if there's different levels of proficiency, you know, isn't it possible for a third grade teacher at California school, a teacher that understands how to use an iPad and to integrate technology in the classroom, and another third grade class that does not have that?
What the schools are trying to build within the technology is collaboration. So if you look at the different plans, there's the for example, if you look at the California plan, there is a plan for the expert teachers to train and work with other teachers.
Yeah, it's in quotes, so I don't know what that means.
Well, quite honestly, in my experience, in another school district, that was the most effective way and the quickest way to get teachers to use technology is to see how other teachers are using it in a way that's improving teaching. And sometimes that's more effective than going to a workshop and seeing it somewhere else. So it's kind of a trainer of trainers. So I really support that.
Who's using Chromebooks then?
No one's using Chromebooks at this point. We're looking at Chromebooks from a district level.
We have some Chromebooks right now that we're sampling and looking at to try to sort of determine what is the platform that people use for which purposes.
And so we've already done that with iPad?
We have some being used at Holland Crest right now, and some of the other teachers are using
them. Some of the teachers are using it, the ones that are, I guess, I'm trying to figure out how, you know, because when you read some of the plans, it looks like every teacher's going to get an iPad.
In some schools, that's what they're doing. And then they're providing training for that. And they're working with the tech department in terms of what are appropriate apps to go on them.
At California, one of the things they just started doing was they're using, they've started a pilot with two of the teachers, and they're using it as a means of having an interactive whiteboard, for lack of a better way to use talk about it. They're having Doceri control their computer and then being able to interact with their whiteboard technology or their screen technology. So the teacher actually has the iPad but can give it to the kids to work through and write on instead of having the smartboard.
And we need an iPad to do that kind of technology?
We could use a tablet possibly, but the iPad seems to be the most preferred
desirable piece
right now.
Well, yeah, of course. It's the most expensive, and if you're giving it free, teachers would love that.
Again, I don't want
to... I mean, I want to see what it's going to be. I mean, I guess I'm still a little confused on when you say we're going to limit the number of apps that are going to be on the iPad. Okay, well, that tells me you're limiting the functionality of whatever.
Well, for example, explain what they're doing at Holland Crest with the app.
So at Holland Crest, they have a cart, and they are using a system
similar to when we had the last.
it is a similar piece to that, as many districts are using, and then they control the functionality of what apps can be downloaded onto the iPad, making sure that we have educational apps that the kids are using, that the teachers and the students are trained on how to use them so that they can be integrated into the lessons, and those sorts of things. So then they're checked out and used in different classes for different purposes. that's how they're currently being
used.
Right,
that's how we used to do it with the laptops.
Right. The challenge with iPad technology is it's designed typically to be a personal use device, and so iPad is working with all districts, but particularly our IT department has been working and trying to figure out a ways to make it manageable and useful so that if we are purchasing apps for school use, for students to use, that it's not a typical way where you have an iTunes card in it. Connects the iPad directly to the card. It's done through a PO process so that the apps can be determined if those are the ones that are useful for educational use that align with our curriculum, those kinds of pieces. So we've been working through all of that. But
so it's going to cost $11.99 to buy a 99-cent app, right?
Huh? Might. No. I'm hoping not.
I guess I'm just a little uncertain about the training behind it and, you know, at this point that some schools are ready for it, some aren't. And you know, the disparity between that you mentioned yourself and teachers. I mean, we're going to set up some schools that are going to be using this technology and others that aren't.
Exactly. Remember, this is a long-term strategic plan, and at the end of the day...
No, these are the school site action
plans. Right. But we're in year one, implementation. So the end of the day, I think we're hoping that we will have the district vision of what is essential to have at every school. We're not there right now. Or in year one, that's part of what this technology committee is doing and coming up with the expectations of what every teacher needs to be able to do, what students need to do. If we wait for that, I think we're losing some very valuable time in terms of teaching and learning because there are people who are ahead of us in that. And so I want to encourage creativity. I want to encourage people to take risks and to try new things to help us define what we're going to do district-wide. And I think in any school district that's made gains in terms of technology, they've had those leaders who kind of led the way. And I think in the past, we've kind of stifled those people because we always waited till everybody had the same thing. And I don't think that that's what we're trying to do with technology. And I don't think we have the luxury of waiting 5 years to have everybody be on the same page when there are some leaders who can really move us forward at a much faster rate and give us feedback at a much faster rate.
did we have this technology component then in the teachers that we hired for this school year just a couple months ago for the new teachers? Did we put that in our teacher description about technology? Because I never saw that come across us. If that was going to be our focus, we should have made that part of our screening process for teachers, new teachers we were hiring.
I think whenever we hire teachers, we look for teachers who have specific skills. Technology is always a skill that we're looking at. I don't think we have the luxury of every teacher having it, but that clearly is, you know, when we write a strategic plan, clearly that's leading what we're looking for in hiring.
What I'm saying is that if we're going to hire based on the ability to do this, that needs to be part of our hiring process, and I don't think it has been.
It's a priority. It's not necessarily ingrained.
They have to be able to lift 25 pounds, but, you know, per all the job descriptions, but they, you know, don't have the technology that now we're going to give them iPads at school sites. That's where I see the disconnect that I'm concerned about.
And I guess what I'm trying to say is we're taking baby steps to get there, and I'm looking at the end and working backwards, and in my mind, I know where I want to be at the end, or I know what I want our district to be able to focus on the end, but this is in year one, and we're taking baby steps to get there, and sometimes we need leaders to show us the way.
Ms. Poulos, do you have any questions?
The disparity in the plans in technology was something I was looking at also. And, for example, West Cove was going to have weekly opportunities in the computer lab, but then it also says that they were going to have access to iPads. Are all students having access to iPads?
What West Cove wanted to do is, or wants to do, is to put iPads in their library. So when classes come in to the library, that there are some apps that students can work on as part of their library experience and start at that level, that there would be students, all students in the school, when they come to their library time, would have the opportunity to also work on the iPads. So in their school, as they're looking at rolling things out, they're looking at their library center to be the place that students would have that access.
To the iPads, but then they'd go to the computer lab once a week.
The computer lab is, you know, the one thing that we're learning as we're looking at technology is not one piece of technology is going to be the answer for everything. So, for example, when you look at iPads, it might be more of an instructional tool or an engagement tool with kids, but when you're looking at the SBAC and taking assessment, it might be more efficient to take it on a computer or take it on a Chromebook. So I think what they're looking for in the different venues are different kinds of experiences for kids. And again, the goal this year was for schools to look at the strategic plan and try to figure out where their entry point was, knowing where their staff was, what was their entry point. And there is disparity in the beginning, but again, the end is that we want everybody to be in the same place, but every school is at a different entry point, and technology is a perfect example of that.
And the reason when I had called, I'd asked, well, are there budgets to go along with this? So I could see how, if you had different needs, how you might have been doing more in training and not actually buying software or buying iPads or buying the apps. Because California is actually buying iPads and they're doing app training for, when you look at everybody's, they seem the most advanced. But there are no budgets that go with this. So
their budget is their school budget. Every school has a budget.
Right.
So when they are identifying things at the school level they're buying, that's coming out of their school budget.
That we approved in May.
Right.
But
and that they're working with their school site councils to develop their SIPSAs. Do you want to explain?
They're currently working on their SIPSAs, so you'll see more of a budget detail on the action steps in that plan in their SIPSA that we bring to you next month.
Okay.
So, I mean, you would see that connection.
And that's an addition to the money that they've gotten from their school site plan?
Well, their school site plan is their SIPSA. So
I thought we approved their budgets in May, but not the plans.
You approved the allocation, but not the plans of how they're going to distribute that money across.
The allocations were how much money they were going to spend in each category, if I remember correctly.
I wasn't here in May. My understanding would have been that most in my previous district was that they approved the allocation to each school and possibly the categories. They have to work with their school site council too.
Councils to determine that. So we approved it because we've changed when you're getting the plan. So they got the allocations and now they're working with their school site plan.
And we approve those allocations. So I'm just trying to figure out, we've already approved their allocations. They've started spending some of that money because we knew that was going to have to happen. And now they have their school site plans and their action plans, which are two different.
They're trying to bring them together, though. They've used their school action plans that are actually going into their SIPSA plans because there's,
right.
There's different regulations. We're trying to bring it all together so that it all makes sense.
Right. The SIPSA is part of the categorical expenditure pieces with the consolidated application. So every school has to have one approved by the school site council. You're all familiar with that. The action plan, though, is really aligned to the strategic plan to help keep us focused on all of the work that everybody looked at last year. So they make those very specific budgetary pieces in the school site plan, not in the action plan. And that's still in the process of being approved by their school site council so we can bring them to the board.
So now that they have their action plans, are they incorporating them into their school site plans?
Yes.
All of these goals?
Yes. They are currently in
so
that process.
Their laptops, or not laptops, their iPads, their apps, their software.
They should be. I haven't read all of them yet, but they should be.
Okay. And is that at our next meeting?
I don't believe it's at the one in...
The school's over.
I want to say it was supposed to be on the one that's on the 25th that we just took care of. So it'd be December 1st. First one in December. We might be able to move it up to the one in early November.
And because they are spending the money, because that's why we gave them their allocations. But we want to make sure that it's aligned to what they're saying they're going to do. Because these are some of them have some real lofty goals. Some of them don't seem to cost as much, but some of the schools seem to cost. And
that's our
decision. And I like to look at the budgets to see how they're going to pay for the different things that they say they're going to do. I want to preface all this with saying that it was
awesome.
That I could see all the work that went into it and the different personalities. For example, Merced's, when I read that, it seems to me that all of the schools should be doing what he's doing on his STEM, where he's looking at the report card, seeing what are the students accountable for, what do we have to do for the core standards, and you can still teach some of the other things, but it's not going to be as weighted as the other information. Are all the schools doing that? Because all of the schools are going to have to do report cards. If I remember correctly, two others named that they were going to check the report cards. When I read the Merced, it actually explained what that was going to look like and how he was going to do it. And so as the superintendent, I could actually see if he did what he said he was going to do. He could actually see. His teachers could see. Step by step, what they were going to do, and when first reporting period, second reporting period, third reporting period, these are the things that they were going to do. Is he the only one going to do that?
That's the plan that he developed for his school. In terms of report cards, we had that in our strategic plan, but we're not, as a district, prepared to do our report cards until we have totally implemented this. We have our frameworks and our curriculum. And we have that all developed, which we're not ready to do, and then you go back to the report cards. So he's looking at his current report cards and looking at ways of implementing that, but he's not changing or developing new report cards.
Right, no, it was going to be
revising
what they were going to be looking at,
right,
for the actual grade. This is what I'm asking the teachers to teach. So this is what the student needs to accomplish to get A, B, C, D, F. So I really appreciate that. So if the other schools haven't opted to do that, how are they going to grade their students on if they're doing core standards and they're getting away from different things we've been teaching and they're not teaching and now they're teaching more in the depth but not as broad? How are they going to grade the students if they haven't changed their criteria?
Well, I think there's going to have to be more narratives in terms of what students are doing, and that's part of the transition, Tammy. It's not clean, it's not clear, that's part of the transition, and every district is trying to sort that out. I think with a lot of our teachers and our staff that we really fail to get our kids prepared for the SBAC and the kinds of the higher level rigorous activities that we got to start with that right away. So within his, he's integrated some of these standards, but that was the way his school decided to address it. And I did leave it up to the schools to pick their entry point. And I think that's where it needs, they have to get ownership for what they're doing and where they're going. And each school has picked their own entry point. And it's going to take us, like it took 16 years to get with the content standards, it's going to take us. But if you remember the bridge, we're right here at the very beginning. And I think what some of the questions you're asking is, but how are we going to get here? And this is the first step, the first entry point of moving towards the strategic plan.
And I understand that. But still, the students are going to have to be graded on something. And reporting, the end of the reporting period is almost over now.
Most of the content is the same. How we're teaching it is different. So I think that as you look at our report cards, and I haven't done that, so I'm not going to address that, but I think each school is still looking at the content. They're looking at their current pacing guides and taking some things out so they can go deeper, but they're still following the basic pacing guides, which are aligned to the report cards. They're just taking some things out so they can go deeper and implement some of these different instructional strategies. I think they're all moving in the same way. They've just designed a different way of getting there.
And I didn't want to say that one was better than the other, although I could follow Merced's. I mean, that's my kind of thinking is step one, step two, step three, step four, and you can just cross them off. The other ones, I really couldn't tell how they were going to get there. But I thought they all needed to do report cards. And some alluded to that, but I had no idea how they were going to do it. I tried to look at the schools that were in program improvement, and theirs did not vary. I mean, theirs were very much the same as everybody else's. I was told that these were done before they found out they were program improvement. Would there have been any differences and a different focus if they would have known that they were going to be in program improvement?
In the PI piece of it, I don't believe that there would have been, because really in this first year, it's on identifying, looking at your plan, revising, just as they're doing currently. I think in the old system, there may have been more of a difference, but because we're already moving to the SBAC system and to the Common Core system, that's really the major transition for us and for them this year. They're looking at interventions with their assessment plans to help struggling students. We don't have that mirror that we're used to, though, for the next couple of years to sort of compare that work one against the other across all of our schools. So we're working on what those pieces look like. But I don't believe that they would have been dramatically different had they known prior to being written.
Edgewood is the only one who talked about intervention that I recall. And then it was in, I'm not even sure if it had anything to do with academics, because it was in active citizenship. So is in their active citizenship, and maybe it wasn't them, I thought it was them. But it was an active citizenship, and one of them said that they were going to be looking at interventions. Do you know if those interventions were just around behavior and citizenship, or were they actually
imagine.
For children, students that were struggling? And it's not on. Oh, is this the high school? No, it was.
Do you want?
I thought it was Edgewood Middle School, but it's. I don't see it here.
Do you want to talk about just briefly the assessment going to? What you and Cheryl Essaker are doing, going to the schools with the assessment plans and looking for the students, just kind of share what you're doing in terms of that.
Basically, the schools are working on assessment plans. With us not having our benchmark assessments this year and not having the CST assessments, we've asked each school to identify what were the, I don't want to say the word common assessments because it all has different meanings, but what were the assessments that they were going to use to measure student progress and student proficiency? What were the things that teachers always were using in the classroom, or what were things that they were developing and beginning to use to measure the new SBAC pieces? Because we knew there would be both of those pieces going on. Mrs. Lessiker and Mrs. Decker and I are going through to each of the school sites and talking with the principals about where they are with that. Very similarly to how they've developed their action plans, most of the principals sat down with their teachers and their leadership teams and developed those on their own. So you'll see similarities because there are common assessments, let's say at the elementary level. The SRI is something that they all have access to and use. But each one of the grade levels determined which piece that they're going to use, how often they're going to implement it. I think more of that sequential quarterly look that you're looking at with the Merced copy will be there. So you'll see those pieces, and then based on those assessment results when they're doing their collaborations on the early release days, they'll decide what kinds of interventions they will do. In a typical PI system, I come from a district where we had schools in PI, there were state-mandated interventions, but they were tied directly to the CST piece. They really took place in the second and third and fourth year and so on. We're not in that place because of the transition we're making. We don't know what those interventions will look like. The intervention materials that we have don't tie to the current Common Core, so we wouldn't be using any of those either. So we're working with them, and then we'll have all of those plans together and see what other supports they need to implement.
And at that time, you'll be looking at what students would benefit from the interventions?
Correct.
You know, where they'd have to test to meet it, or is everyone going to be available? Are those interventions going to be for everyone?
Well, we're looking for students who are not proficient from the data that we know now. Now, to complicate this even more, the state is asking us to develop LCAP plans aligned to the LCF. I feel like I'm using all these. Okay. And in those plans, we're specifically to look for how the supplemental funds that we get for our ELD, our English learners and students of poverty, and how we're going to support them. So what my thinking is in terms of that is a district that we would develop tiered interventions that would be district level tiered interventions, and looking at where kids are, we would provide those interventions, and that might be our LCAP plan. That's not due to the state. The template's just coming out at the beginning of the year, but we're already starting to think about that because the basis for improving student achievement is to be able to give extra time and extra instruction. So we're trying to look at a tiered level.
And it's not due until next year, but what are we going to do for this?
We're working on it now. That's what we're working on with the assessments plan.
Are we looking at, I know there's always a funding issue. Is it going to just be for the students that have individual learning plans?
Well, my hope would be that school sites will use interventions to support students that are struggling. I think, obviously, students who are struggling more than other students are going to get more interventions. I don't think that the individualized learning plans based on sort of their report card grades are going to be something that prohibits kids from getting supports. I think one of the challenges in a PI situation is it's, yes, you're looking at the individual students, but it's multiple tiers and multiple kinds of interventions. So you'll be looking at school-wide interventions, doing more universal access times at schools, those sorts of pieces. The challenge for us is that looks very different in the new CCSS system, and who would and would not fall into those groups also looks very different. So right now the schools are working on those pieces, and we're trying to gather as much information as we can, because we're building the plane while flying it, as all districts are, in order to support those children. So I think right now what you see is a very school-centered approach to how do they support kids who aren't proficient readers at this time. Now, through their PLCs and through the work that we do at the district office and through our Mrs. Lessiker's visits and my visits with the schools, there's some collaboration back and forth, so you'll see some more consistency. But then the other interesting piece is good teaching is good teaching, so sometimes you see that filter over to the other schools, and it's hard to tell the difference sometimes for schools. So we're working on all of those things right now.
And this isn't exactly with this, but what's the percentage of students at each school that have individual learning plans? And how did, I mean, because I know it's the students that aren't proficient, and they're usually, and do all students that aren't proficient get to have a individual learning plan?
I'm not sure what that percentage is right now.
I'm not sure what the percentage is. My understanding was the individual learning plan was connected to those report card grades and those D's and F's. I wasn't aware that it was connected to the CST piece, so I'd have to find out that information for you.
And it's actually connected to D's?
To grades, I should say. I misspoke with the D's and F's.
I think each school does individual learning plans. I think they've been using the CST data to develop those based on kids who are not proficient. That's my understanding, the way they've been using them. And they still have that data.
And so younger children who don't take the test?
No, because they do diagnostic testing at the younger kids. They do testing at each grade level in terms of length.
Well, when you were saying that was what they were using.
They use assessment data, I guess is what I want to say. They use assessment data to develop those plans. Usually principals meet with their teachers, look at in the previous one, principals met with teachers looking at their class as it is, what the assessment data is for their students at the beginning of the year, and the assessments that they give going forward in terms of diagnostic, and they develop those plans and use those ongoing assessments to see if they're making progress.
That's all I have for right now. I look forward to seeing the budgets.
Mr. Cox. Mr. Spence had another comment.
I have one more question, and that is... in dealing with technology and the disparity between teachers, et cetera, in schools, is there a disparity in principals when it comes to being able and capable of doing this kind of stuff we're talking about?
I would have to say there's a disparity of probably in this room. There would also be a disparity, I think.
But is that disparity outside the norm that it creates an issue where
I'm not
that's why things aren't reflected in the plan, or that's why some schools are getting things and some aren't?
I think that we're focusing on technology right now. In the past, that wasn't a focus. Our strategic plan has us focused on technology, and it's causing us to evaluate what each school has. I think in the past, the district had I can only speak from what I know, not from experience, but there was document cameras in every school. There was certain equipment that was every school had that was common. And I think through the Common Core and the SBAC, we're reevaluating what we said was appropriate to have at each school. There always was disparity. Some schools had more smart boards than others because schools always use their money different ways for technology. So there's always been a disparity. I think with the strategic plan, we're trying to identify what we want common to everybody. And they're at different entry points. It may take us some schools longer to get there. But, yeah, there's a disparity, and our goal is to bridge that gap.
Well, yeah, but I guess my question is, I mean, and does it take changing a principal if that's the reason teachers that may be ready to use technology aren't able to access it because the principal's not capable of being the educational instructional leader at that school?
I don't see that I don't think that. I personally don't see that as standing in the way. I see all of our principals embracing technology and trying to learn more if they don't know about it and to promote and motivate their schools. As you can see, I think there are some sites, you know, quite honestly, there was a site last year where the principal was new to the site, Mrs. Lessiker, and you know, in teachers weren't even using email and had to bring somebody in to train the teachers on how to use their email and basically saying everything that I send to you is going to be through email. So in the past, there have been different expectations at every site. What we're trying to do is have the same expectations for all sites.
And then that also needs to be reflected in how we hire principals, too.
Absolutely.
That's a good point.
Good time.
Okay. This is excellent work, and I'm so excited. Like I said, I was looking forward to this presentation because it has such a unified effect for the entire district. I agree with Ms. Poulos in saying that you can see different people's personalities throughout it, but nonetheless, we still are working as a unified district and not in silos. So I'm thrilled that we have all worked and come around the strategic plan and embraced it. So I'm thrilled with the work that everyone's doing. I look forward to the budgets as well. I had developed a partnership with the Youth Science Center. This, as I was reading through the draft agenda, the draft presentation, are we going to help parents by placing on our website some of the activities that are available over the summer that fall in line with our strategic plan? For example, the Youth Science Center has summer science programs that are amazing that my children have been taking for three years now. Mount SAC has science and technology courses as well for high schools, I mean for elementary and junior high school students. So some of the offerings in the San Gabriel Valley that fall in line with what we're trying to accomplish, the writing component, so that parents can click on maybe in March as they're starting to think about summer. This is what's going on in the San Gabriel Valley that supports the learning that's going on in the classroom.
Don't schools do that now, though? I mean, from a school?
No, I can't say that I've seen that, and I've visited all the school sites.
Well, I mean, I don't know who your kids' teachers are, but our kids' teachers, even though they go to the same school, they would tell us stuff during the summer that they should try
that's
to
the
read
individual,
books,
that's
try to
that's
go to these things. I mean, so, I mean, I don't know how just placing things on the website without the context of grade levels and teacher instruction, I mean, I don't know. To me, that almost seems like it should be a teacher-school thing rather than a school district thing.
Well, there's some programs like the Youth Science Center that it doesn't matter what school, what level, what ability, it's science, and it's excellent for kids.
Well, yeah,
the
classroom is
excellent
for kids, but if we're talking about the specific things, I just don't know. I mean, I know I get that stuff from my kids' teachers. Maybe you need to go to a different school. But
no, not all of them do.
I think we're trying.
Solomon's very good at it, but that's it.
I think we're trying to build our website to have resources for parents,
right.
And that's certainly something we can look at. As
increasing the resources for them for the summer, and there's a lot of offerings in the San Gabriel Valley. So that was my question there, because I love the Youth Science Center.
And if there's scholarships available?
Yes, I know that they offer.
Don't they do that at the individual sites? Are you talking about scholarships for these programs?
Yes.
Okay.
Because I know some of the programs are costly, and I had one mother tell me this, and I'll never forget. She goes, "I know that $10 isn't a lot." They had asked for something for her to buy discs, and she goes, "That's meat for my children for the week, or I can buy the discs." She goes, "What would be your choice?" So it's great to put those things out there, but if there's ways to make it obtainable for parents, and if we know that there's organizations out there that are willing to give grants or scholarships to students to go to those things in the summer, that would be awesome.
Yeah, you know, but I don't want to be in the business of promoting groups or whatever just because we like them on the website. That's why I think the school site might be a better place for some of those things. I mean, because there's summer programs that I've been through, summer programs my kids have gone through, you know, that I'm not sure. I mean, would we put, you know, German camp for a week, you know, would we put it on the website?
I don't think so, because it doesn't fall in line with our strategic plan and what we're trying
to
accomplish.
What,
it doesn't global.
International mindedness? Come on.
Doesn't fall in line.
No,
we're not global learners.
Yeah, they're global learners,
global
citizens.
We're
citizens.
Not.
Global citizenship. So, you know, but I mean, there's so many things you could end up putting in there, and a lot of them do cost money, and, you know, they're run by all kinds of stuff. You know, I don't know how we could be a one. I mean, I think there has to be some kind of balance in how we do all that.
Well, perhaps, you know, we again have a lens. If we're using youth science, for example, with our kids and they have something to support what they're doing during the school year, throughout the year, I agree with you. You can't just put everything up there, and I don't want to be responsible for putting something up that I have not had involvement with, which may not be worth the money that you're paying. I don't want to be in that position. But if things come our way that support, you know, we're looking for grants for STEM education. If things come our way, then, you know, we can consider it.
And don't get me wrong, nothing's more fun than, I'm sure, being trapped in the woods with old German ladies, you know, learning German for a week. I mean, I can't think of anything more fun. But my kids like it.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Hawkins. Thank you, Ms. Kaplan. Okay. Can we take a 5-minute break, and then we'll go on to item number 10, which is the information report. Okay. Thank you, everyone.